Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
Zachary tipped me off to a wacky case involving an attorney screwing up by not checking his email properly. And this is the kind of thing that this will send shivers up and down the spines of all the attorneys in my audience. And I've got some attorneys in my audience. How you doing, people? But anybody who's in business, who uses email for business, should probably pay heed to this, because there probably is a situation that's parallel to this in your business as well. But we have an attorney who missed a court notice in his email. As a result of him missing the court notice, his client's case got dismissed, thrown out in its entirety. And I suspect right now someone is talking to a malpractice carrier about trying to figure out how much money they owe that client. But I'm speculating at that point, because all I have in front of me is the Court of Appeals opinion affirming what happened in the lower court. And what happened in the lower court was the attorney missed the email. So we'll go into this. But as the judge wrote in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in the case of Rollins versus Home Depot, this is a cautionary tale for every attorney who litigates in the era of e-filing, electronic filing. And, you know, in the old days, you used to draft a complaint, the lawsuit. And in the real old days, you would type it up and then you go file the original and some copies with the court and then go serve the copies and blah, blah, blah. Later on, you had laser printers and you'd type it up on a computer, you'd hit print, and then you'd print these things out and you take it to court and get some certified and all that. You'd file some and then you'd serve it. And now there's e-filing, where you draft a document and then through the magic of the tubes and wires and the internet, you can e-file it without leaving the comfort of your own office. And it giveth and it taketh, because a lot of stuff is happening electronically and virtually. And some people are not that savvy, but also there are mistakes that get made. And we all know the problems with email. I have two emails account that I use in my life. One of them is primarily a business account, and one is primarily the account that I use for this channel. And unfortunately, both of those emails have been published in places that they've been scraped by web crawlers. And so I get more trash, more junk emails on both accounts than I get real emails, worthwhile emails from actual people. And some of them are the same scams over and over and over again. I still get them daily saying, "Dear beneficiary, someone with your last name passed away recently in Nigeria, and we've got a trunk of money that belongs to you." There's other ones that I get also over and over again. But the point is that every day, at least once, I go through my trash and look to see what's there, or the spam folder actually is what it's called in my system. And I go through the spam and I go through the trash just to make sure that nothing got too aggressively removed from what I should be seeing. And once in a while, something does sneak through, but I find it. Well, not everyone does that. So the plaintiff in this case brought suit against Home Depot, where he had worked. And Home Depot filed a motion for summary judgment on the eve of the party's agreed upon deadline for dispositive motions. And summary judgment, or summary disposition, they call it in Michigan state courts, but summary judgment in the federal system, is where you can file a motion with the court and say the facts of this case are not in dispute. This is one example. And because the facts are not in dispute, we don't need to have a trial. The court can just rule right now. And it's often that there's not enough evidence to go forward. There's no genuine issue of material fact, and there's nothing that would allow the party to proceed because they haven't got anything. And that's one of them. Failure to state a claim is another one, where you actually say they filed a lawsuit, but what they're claiming in the lawsuit isn't actually something you can sue for. It should be thrown out. And the court can look at the pleadings in that case and go, "Yeah, you're right," and throw the case out. So here, there's a deadline for filing dispositive motions. And when you get a scheduling order from the court, it'll give you drop-dead dates. It'll say, "You must do this by this date. You must do this by this date." And there's often a date where it says, "You must file dispositive motions by this date." And those are the motions where one side asks the other to, first they'll ask you, "Would you agree to dismiss this?" You say, "No, of course not." Then they then ask the court to dismiss the case. So the dispositive motion deadline would get calendared. You'd be aware of it, and it's something you should know about. So the attorney for Home Depot filed a motion for summary judgment. He filed the motion electronically, which he was required to do and was allowed to do by the courts. But the attorney for the plaintiff never saw the notice of the motion because his computer's email system placed the notification in a folder that he does not regularly monitor. That's the mistake. You should monitor all your email folders or have someone monitor them and make sure that something that's important didn't get kicked into the wrong file. That's the wrong folder. That's just something you should be doing as a matter of course. And if I can do it with the hundreds and hundreds of lousy spam emails I get daily, you can do it too. You just scan them. You look at the, you know, when you're scanning through the list, it'll, you know, the subject line and the sender. And this probably had a subject line of motion for summary judgment. And the sender would have been the other side. The guy should have spotted that if he had looked. So he did not monitor the system file folder, and he did not check the docket after the deadline for dispositive motions had passed. As a result, the attorney did not file an opposition to the summary judgment motion. So the court gets a motion from one side saying, we think the case should be dismissed. The other side doesn't respond. You look in the file and it goes, well, it was served on the other side. They got it. They didn't respond. And it does happen from time to time where somebody asks the court to dismiss a case. You call up the other side and go, what's your argument? They go, you know something, we agree with you. It happens. It happens. So now the attorney is asking the court for relief from the order that dismissed the case. And there's a court rule that says that they could theoretically do that rule, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 59E. But the precedents and the way the courts have interpreted that rule in the past make it clear that no such relief is available under circumstances such as this. So it all goes back to, in the beginning of the case, the plaintiff was injured while moving a bathtub for Home Depot. He then filed a lawsuit in state court against Home Depot, and they removed it to federal court. I'm not going to get into the jurisdictional arguments about that. It just happens, okay? So counsel for the plaintiff agreed to receive filings through the district court's electronic filing system via an email address he provided, which is typical for federal courts across the country. I'm admitted to practice law in both the federal courts in Michigan, and when I practice law there, which does not happen very often because most of my Lemon Law cases are state court cases, but once in a while I do. And I get notices emailed to me, and I get pleadings emailed to me, and it's all through this system, and it's handy. But I also am aware of the fact that, oh, I've got a case pending in federal court. I got to keep my eyes peeled just in case I get a notification from the court system saying that there's another pleading here you need to know about. So, by the way, you also provide them with an email address. They say, what email address would you like us to use? So if you have problems with an email account, get another one. Or, you know, pick one that doesn't have problems. So I know of the two email accounts I've got, I know which one I would give them, and I'd give them that one because it gets less junk sent to it, but it still gets junk nonetheless. On May 7th, Home Depot filed this motion for summary judgment, and plaintiff's attorney contends that the notification for that filing was inadvertently filtered into a part of the attorney's email system listed as other, instead of the main email box where all prior filings in the case were received. So for some odd reason, one filing got sent over and it got rerouted. Now, here's the thing. Whose fault is that? Well, it's not the court's fault. It's not the defense attorney's fault. It's the law firm's fault that has a system that routes important emails into a file labeled other. I can tell you that when I go through the trash in my system, I occasionally find stuff that's in the trash that's there because a filter saw too many links and just assumed that the links were an indication that this thing was a spam email. And so my spam filters being as aggressive as they are, I glance through this stuff. And a lot of people will send me a note and say, hey, Steve, I saw this article about a story you ought to do a video about. Here's a link to it. And here's another link in case that one doesn't work. And if you put too many links in the emails, they get dumped into the garbage. I'm not going to do much about that because my worry is that if I lower how aggressive these filters are, then my inbox gets piled up. I find most important emails, and the ones that come from courts, I do find. Okay, so the motion got filed with the court, and a copy was served on this man's other email box. As a result, counsel did not see the electronic notification of Home Depot's motion, nor did counsel learn of the motion when he contacted Home Depot's counsel a few days later to discuss the possibility of settlement. Now, here is a little bit of a problem. The plaintiff's attorney called the defense attorney and said, hey, can we talk settlement? And the defense attorney didn't say, why should we talk settlement? We just filed a motion for summary. Didn't mention it, apparently. The scheduling order imposed a 14-day deadline to file and serve responses to the motion. After that deadline came and went without any response from the plaintiff's attorney, the district court reviewed the pleadings, granted the motion, and entered a final judgment dismissing the case. Now, plaintiff's counsel did not know any of this until he reached out to Home Depot's counsel again to discuss settlement. And in response, the attorney said, the case has been dismissed. We can't discuss settlement. There's nothing to settle. The case is over. And at that point, the attorney said, oh, and he filed the motion now to have it all set aside. And of course, the district court denied that motion, which is why the Court of Appeals is hearing this motion. And they denied it also, because Rule 59 states that a motion to alter or amend a judgment must be filed no later than 28 days after the entry of the judgment. This is an extraordinary remedy that should be used sparingly. And the text of the rule does not specify the available grounds for obtaining this relief, but the courts have explained that the rule motions are for the narrow purpose of correcting manifest errors of law or fact or presenting newly discovered evidence, not for raising arguments which could and should have been made before the judgment issued. And they're saying, hey, look, you got notice of this motion. You should have responded to it. If you'd responded to it, we wouldn't be here right now. We have further noted that Rule 59E allows a party to alter or amend a judgment when there's been an intervening change in the controlling law, but there's no such change here. The attorney argues that the district court abused its discretion when it denied his motion on the ground that the only reason his attorney did not know about the Home Depot motion was due to a glitch in his email system. Court rule doesn't mention glitches in email systems. The argument is squarely foreclosed under precedent. In other cases, the plaintiff's counsel failed to file a response to a motion because, among other reasons, defective antivirus software diverted court emails to a spam folder. So there's actually case law on almost identical facts, but instead of other, it went to spam. The district court granted the defendant's unopposed motion to dismiss. The plaintiff sought relief under Rule 59E, and we, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, rejected the argument, explaining that failure to file a response to a motion to dismiss is not a manifest error of law or fact. And it's basically just negligence on the part of the attorney. So we do not question the good faith of plaintiff's counsel, but it is not manifest error to deny relief when failure to file was within counsel's reasonable control. So they point out that the notice was sent to the email address the counsel provided, and the rule provides for service by filing pleadings with the court's electronic filing system, and explains that service is complete upon filing or sending. That rule was satisfied here. So it's unfortunate. And I feel bad for the plaintiff in this case because his attorney screwed up. His attorney screwed up to the point where a case got dismissed and it looks like it's not going to get reinstated. And we can all relate to the oversight here. We can all understand this. We've all missed things in our lives. There have been occasions where someone left you a note, you didn't see it. You left a note for somebody and because of how you left it, they didn't see it. You had a date on a calendar. You wrote it on the wrong day. You know, if you've made it this far in life, and I don't know how old you are, but if you've made it this far in life and have never showed up someplace the wrong date and time, then we need to talk. Because I think we all have. Now, I can tell you, 30 years of practicing law. I taught law school for 10, but 30 years of practicing law. And so we've got the legal training in law school. We've got the bar exam, and we've got 30 years of practicing law and 10 years of teaching at a law school. And I can tell you that one of the most important things that lawyers are taught and that lawyers learn is the importance of dates and times. Because if you don't show up, you will often lose. And that is hammered into you at law school. It's hammered into you by the court rules. It's hammered into you during practice. It's hammered into you by judges when you're late. And luckily, in my career, I have never missed an important thing like this. And I've never walked into court a day late and had somebody said, "Mr. Leto, where were you yesterday?" It's never happened to me. I have seen it happen to other people. I've seen it happen to people on cases of mine. And I have had cases where I have personally, because I'm an attorney, I'm allowed to serve cases, summons and complaints on my own cases. I've actually served somebody by hand, handed it to them. They got service. 21 days goes by, they don't file an answer. 28 days goes by, they don't file an answer. 21 is what matters, but 28 is often mistakenly believed to be the cutoff date. So after all time goes by and there's no answer, no response, I file a default. File the default, serve the default. Suddenly I get a phone call from an attorney. The attorney goes, "Hey, Steve, will you set this default aside?" I said, "I'm curious, what's your client's explanation as to why they didn't answer on time?" I've had an attorney say, "My client forgot about it. He forgot about it." And I've actually had that happen more than once, believe it or not. And the interesting thing is, I've actually gotten different reactions from a court. Because the court rules in Michigan say specifically that simple neglect is not a good enough argument to say, "Oh, I screwed up. I neglected it." Court should look at that and say, "Well, that's too bad. Here's what happens when you neglect something." And boom, the default should stand. I've had it before where a judge said, "I'm going to leave the default in place." And I've also had it before where a judge said, "Ah, we all make mistakes." But at state court, because you recall at the very beginning, I told you that this case, Rollins versus Home Depot, is a federal court case. And federal courts often play a little more strictly with the rules. And so federal judges often follow the rules quite closely. And they also follow the rules quite closely based on the precedent of the courts above them. And so the Fifth Circuit specifically has ruled not just on this rule, but on these exact same facts where somebody got notice via email, it went into the wrong folder, the person missed it, blew a deadline, and then came into court and said, "Your Honor, it was in the wrong folder." And courts have said now twice, apparently, in the Fifth Circuit, "Guess what? We believe you, but you still lose. You still lose." So getting back the first sentence of the opinion, the judge wrote, "This is a cautionary tale for every attorney who litigates in the era of e-filing. You need to have an email account that you check daily and you look through it for stuff in the inbox, but also in the other file, the trash file, the spam file, whatever the other files are. Dig through those before you dump them out, the folders." And so that is what you should take away from this. And so this story gives me the heebie-jeebies. It does. It absolutely does. But it hasn't happened to me yet. I know. People right now are going, "Steve, knock on wood, knock on wood." Yeah, yeah, I got tons of wood around there, but I can't reach it. So that's okay. But Zachary, thanks for sending it. Rollins versus Home Depot. "This is a cautionary tale for every attorney who litigates in the era of e-filing. You got to check your email, including your other folder." Questions, comments, put it below. Let's talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. I travel because I'd rather look back at my life saying, "I can't believe I did that," instead of, "If only I had."